From WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. The crisis is now, President Bush told his White House conference on the economy today. And the crisis he was talking about is in Social Security. That core of American retirement is on a train wreck path, the conference was told today. The president did not fully spell out a plan to fix it, but privatizing some Social Security investment is clearly front and center. Critics charge that privatization is just a bauble, a distraction from a radical diminishment of Social Security that they argue does not have to happen. But George W. Bush knows how to push an agenda, and he is now officially in gear. Tonight on Point, the great debate over Social Security. We begin in Washington, where the White House conference on the economy wrapped up this afternoon with a Social Security overhaul on the president's must-do-now list.
We wait and wait and wait, and the crisis is upon us, and everybody demands a solution. The problem with that when it comes to a modernization of Social Security is that the longer we wait, the more expensive the solution becomes.
Michael Cranish is Washington correspondent for the Boston Globe. He's been covering the conference and joins us now from Washington. Michael, thanks for being with us tonight.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Very well. So a lot on this agenda, and at the center of it all, I guess, Social Security.
Right. You know, the Social Security system, it pays out about $500 billion a year. So many millions of Americans obviously depend on this system. A lot of younger Americans don't think that it'll be there when they retire, at least in full. The system does start running out of money, meaning that it starts taking in less than it pays out in 2018. So that's not that far in the future. And then there's trust funds, but those start running out as well. And clearly the system does start running out of money pretty rapidly after that.
So exactly what was the president proposing today? He didn't spell out a detailed plan. What's afoot here? He's clearly got something being orchestrated. What is it, Michael?
Right. Well, Tom, there's two things, and I think most people, they've probably heard the president talk about his wish to have private accounts in Social Security. If that happens, right now the maximum you pay in Social Security taxes is about $12,000 a year, and some of the plans he's looking at take about $1,000 of that and put it into private accounts. So we're not talking about taking all of the taxes. So it's that smaller amount. And at the same time, he's saying there's a $10 trillion, T as in Tom, dollar hole in the overall Social Security budget. If you wanted today to make Social Security solvent for the foreseeable future, would take $10 trillion. That is about the equivalent of the country's annual gross domestic product. Enormous, enormous amount of money. He doesn't want to put $10 trillion in. He wants to find a way around that, and he hopes that part of the way around that is to allow people to put some money into these private accounts. The experts that I've talked to don't think that comes up with enough money to then make the system solvent. So the question is not just over private accounts, which is all that Bush has talked about, but also will they raise taxes? Bush has ruled that out. Would they cut benefits? Bush has not ruled out cutting benefits for people who are younger workers today. In other words, he said people who are retired today, nothing changes. And he's repeated that again and again. He said those near retirement, nothing changes. But he hasn't defined what
near means.
Retirement means. Mm-hmm. So there's some plans that say 55 or older and so forth.
Because, of course, it's the baby boomers who are approaching retirement.
Right.
Now, that huge wave.
Right. But the experts that I've talked to, I did a long story about this for Sunday's Globe in addition to covering this conference. And in that story talked about experts looking at it and saying even with the retirement accounts that in a typical case they'll still be talking probably about cutting future promised benefits for today's younger workers. I really want to stress that because I don't want someone who's retired today to get concerned. What does this mean for him or her? Obviously, they're not affected. Everyone's made that clear. But for someone who's even 54 or 53, if most of the plans are enacted, they would be affected. They would get perhaps some of the benefit of private accounts, but there's also this possibility as a trade-off, they would lose some future promised benefits. I can't tell you or the listeners what any of this means because Bush has not been specific. He said he wants private investment accounts. He hasn't said how much. He hasn't said whether there'll be future benefit cuts. He really hasn't endorsed any particular plan other than some principles that he's laid out. So people like you and me can't pick apart the plan. The public can't pick it apart because he hasn't endorsed a plan. He had a commission that he appointed 3 years ago in 2001, came forward and said, Mr. President, okay, we've taken your principles. We've come back. Here are three alternatives. Pick one. And here it is, 2004. He has not picked one of those three plans produced by his hand-picked commission. So,
and yet he's saying this is essentially at the top of his second-term agenda. He's challenging Congress today to go forward and do something. He's telling them that this is not political suicide. Why not? He says, I campaigned on this, and look, I won the White House. Is he saying if you put privatization front and center, Americans are going to go for this?
Well, there are some Democrats who were upset about this, and they say he's, you know, exaggerating the amount of the problem by trying to push his plan for these private accounts. It's not privatization of Social Security, certainly in total, because most of the Social Security taxes would still go into the system.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
That's how we pay for today's, you know, retirees' benefits.
Mm-hmm.
The money that you know, the retirees get today is not necessarily their own money. It's money that you and I put into the system today, and that's the way it goes.
But what's afoot here, Michael, is the sense that there's a plan that's already polished up, and he's going to slowly have that emerge through Republicans in Congress, or is he really just going to say, Congress, have a debate, I'll watch?
Well, that's a really good question. You know, look back a few years ago when Bush came forward with this tax cut plan, almost every Republican was on board, you know, saying Yahoo, and some Democrats as well. Even John Kerry voted for some tax cuts and so forth, obviously. Mm. Didn't want it on the very wealthiest. This is different. There's disagreement within the Republican Party about many factors of this. There's big disagreement among the Democrats about what Bush wants to do. I know of only a few who are pretty much out there saying, yes, let's have the private accounts, and Bush is correct. He's got a lot of salesmanship to do. First, he has to do it to the public, because I think the members of Congress haven't heard, you know, the kind of pressure from constituents that normally is necessary to provoke them to do something.
And that's what
part
this is all
Bush is trying to do. He's trying to say to the public, look,
mm-hmm.
this is a big problem.
Mm-hmm.
But he has a lot of selling to do, and without a specific plan, it's kind of tough.
When do you expect, Michael, that on Capitol Hill there will begin to be the outlines of a specific Social Security overhaul? Are we talking just a couple months from now?
The Republicans that I've talked to who think this is very important and must be done have urged that Bush announce a specific plan by the State of the Union address so they can get to work. If it draws out, or Bush basically says, I'm not going to come up with a specific, you guys come to me, it's a little bit more difficult to see how something will happen. But there is a scenario under which he announces something late January, State of the Union time, and that there will be a lot of momentum there. He's got that second term, you know, honeymoon, however long that
mm-hmm.
lasts, and maybe Congress will do something. But the opportunity obviously is right now. He's talking about it, and he does have perhaps a short-term opportunity to really get something done. But oftentimes these things do drag out for a very long period of time. He does control both houses of Congress, so perhaps he can get it done without Democratic support. But that seems hard to imagine. It seems like this is the kind of thing where you really, if you're going to overhaul one of the most important programs run by the government, that you'd want to have substantial Democratic support as well.
Well, the table is clearly being set for a big push. We'll be watching. Michael Cranish, thank you so much for being with us tonight.
Thanks for having me.
Michael Cranish, White House correspondent for the Boston Globe. He spoke with me from Washington. We are talking tonight about the White House push to overhaul Social Security and the great debate now looming in Washington over how that should be done. You can join the conversation. Are you ready to join what Democrats today called a pep rally for privatization? Is there a better way ahead for Social Security? You can join the conversation at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining me now from Palo Alto, California, is John Chauvin, professor of economics and director of the Institute for Economic Research at Stanford University. He's author of The Real Deal, The History and Future of Social Security. John Chauvin, thanks so much for being with us tonight.
Glad to be here.
Wonderful to have you. We're going to hear in a few minutes from Paul Krugman, who, as you know, is a big critic of the White House position here. But you've been involved down in the boiler room, I think, trying to help the president and his crew work out what a way forward might look like. What are you hearing coming out of this conference and more broadly out of the quarters who think these things through on the GOP side? What's coming at us?
Well, I was not at the conference. However, I do think that the president's commission, particularly their so-called Plan 2,
mm-hmm.
Is a starting point from where the president's going to be developing his plan. I think Plan 2 of that president's commission, the one that Senator Patrick Moynihan co-chaired with Richard Parsons, that's where they're going to start.
Richard Parsons, head of Time Warner, AOL, who today said the train wreck is coming here in Social Security.
I think there is some truth to that. Now, I also would say that I think the individual accounts are the sort of overblown feature of the Bush plan. The truth is that Social Security, as Michael said, faces a solvency crisis. The benefits that are currently legislated and promised exceed future tax revenues. That is, we're promised more revenues than we have any idea where we're going to get the money.
Mm-hmm.
There's really no way around solving that solvency problem other than cutting the promised benefits or raising contributions and taxes.
Mm-hmm.
Individual accounts may or may not be a nice feature. I actually think they add something to Social Security, but they don't solve the solvency problem.
Let me ask you something, then. I want to get to how you solve that. But if that's the case, why is there so much talk about privatization? It seems to be, you know, watch the swinging, hypnotist gold watch. That seems to be what's out front entirely.
It's the emotional issue, but it's actually not the main story, so we have
mm-hmm.
to watch this one closely.
Mm-hmm.
Anytime somebody proposes a Social Security reform that restores solvency, you should look for where they're cutting benefits, how they're cutting benefits, or where they're raising taxes or contributions. If you can't find any, then you know it's a fake solution.
Let me ask you then, in this plan two of the president's commission, which you say he may well use as a launch pad, I've seen a comparison out of that plan that looks down the road. And let's say this is in 2065, where under today's structure, a worker would be entitled, this is sort of a median income worker in the United States, would be entitled to about $26,400 in Social Security, $26,400.
Right.
Under Plan 2, as I understand it, that would decrease to $14,600, a huge diminution, which would mean old age in America is something very different than it is now.
Yeah, I don't think those figures are correct. What isn't well appreciated is that the current law not only provides that future retirees will get as much as today's retirees, but that they will get more. Currently, as you may know, mm-hmm. the initial benefits, the starting benefits that you get,
right.
are tied to the average wage in the economy. By 2065, the average wage, if we're at all lucky, will be double what it is today.
So they're indexed to wages, not
currently,
to inflation.
Mm-hmm. Right. Currently, the law reads that retirees in 2065 will get twice as much as today's retirees. President's Commission Proposal Number 2 says that retirees in 2065 should get the same amount in real terms, adjusted for inflation, as today's retirees. And what they are doing is reducing the benefit increases that are currently in the law. And that actually, by itself, without individual accounts, restores solvency.
The same as today. But again, I know there's lots of room for interpretation here. I've seen it interpreted this way. That under the current structure, those retiring workers would get about 40% of their wages before they retired. Under Plan 2, they'd get 22%.
Right.
That's a much smaller bowl of soup.
No, that particular fact is correct. What you just said is
mm-hmm,
correct.
Mm-hmm.
What Social Security becomes is a safety net, a floor, offering the same real level of income that we offer today. But as wages go up over time, that floor perhaps looks smaller and smaller.
So those retirees are going to feel a much, much greater drop if they depend on Social Security at retirement.
Absolutely. Although Social Security was never from the beginning designed to be the only retirement program in America.
Mm-hmm.
Some fraction of Americans have relied on it as their only source of retirement. And what Bush is proposing is that we go back to the original FDR design where it would be one of the elements of providing for your retirement, but you would be responsible for some of your own retirement. But let me make clear. He is not proposing that future benefits be lower than today's benefits. He's only proposing to eliminate the increases in those benefits.
I guess that depends how you look at it. It would certainly be a very different dynamic. We're going to be diving into it deeply tonight. John Chauvin, thanks for being with us. Hang on, we've got to take a short break. We're talking about the White House push to overhaul Social Security and the great debate over how that should be done. You can join the conversation. Something's got to be done, but what? What's your recommendation? And does privatizing look like a real part of the solution to you, or just a sweetener on a massively shrinking Social Security? We're at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about the White House push to overhaul Social Security. You can join the conversation tonight. Would you rather see higher taxes or less Social Security? Will the markets save this program? And can America still afford Social Security as we've known it? You can join us tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We've been joined tonight from Palo Alto, California, by John Chauvin, professor of economics and director of the Institute for Economic Policy Research at Stanford University. We're joined now from Princeton, New Jersey, by Paul Krugman, New York Times op-ed columnist, a professor of economics at Princeton, author of the new textbook on microeconomics, with another macroeconomics due out in the fall of 2005. Paul Krugman, thanks for being with us tonight.
Good to be on.
And you've written only very recently that, hey, wait a minute, there's not even a crisis here. We begin to get confused. What do you mean?
Well, you're being deliberately confused. Look, Social Security will, in a few decades, when the population has gotten older, will have some financial problems, pretty mild financial problems as these things go. Right now, you know, the way the federal budget works is the Social Security has its own budget, has its own tax base, it has its own budget. That budget is in substantial surplus now. It's taking in about 125% of its expenses. A couple of decades from now, that will turn into a balance and then into a deficit.
And then into a big deficit.
No, turn into a mild deficit.
We're talking trillions, aren't we?
Yeah, but here's the number. When the trust fund is exhausted, this date when the Social Security Administration says the trust fund will be gone.
The current taxes don't cover it, and the reserve is gone, and now we're staring.
2042, at that point, Social Security revenues will cover only 73% of scheduled benefits.
Okay.
That's a pessimistic estimate. Some people think it's actually further out, and it's not that bad. Right now, today, the rest of the federal government is taking in only 70 cents for every dollar of expenses. We have a much bigger fiscal crisis in the general fund, in the rest of the government.
You mean we're borrowing to cover expenses right across the waterfront, you're saying? But
that's
what difference does that make?
Except Social Security.
That only makes it worse, though, doesn't it?
But that's telling you that the problem is not Social Security. Social Security, which has been given a standalone budget since its inception, mm-hmm. is in pretty good shape. We have a huge budget crisis outside Social Security, generated in large part by President Bush's tax cuts. Not entirely, but that's the biggest single factor. And so here we are. The Bush has just squandered the budget on tax cuts, and his answer to that is to say, look, there's a crisis in Social Security. Pay no attention to the actual fiscal crisis in the rest of the government that's right in front of us right now.
Well, we got that, and we'll come back to it, but it leaves that hole, call it big or call it small, of some trillions. It sounds big to most Americans. How would you – we're going to hear more from John Chauvin, but how would you fill that hole and keep Social Security benefits – whole, as it were, Paul Krugman.
If we took a few mild reforms, a gradual increase in the retirement age, slight change in the formula for price indexation, and some increase in the top level of income to which payroll taxes apply, the hole is filled. The truth is, it's not even clear that there is any hole. You know, if you take reasonable growth estimates, the kinds of growth estimates that are being used to justify privatization on the other side, Social Security is solvent for another century. This is a phony crisis.
John Chauvin, join us here. This may be a phony crisis. It may be a real crisis. It seems a lot to ask people to figure out the difference. Somebody's, leaning hard in one way or another or not telling the truth here. Do we have a crisis or not? And is mild reform enough to fix what you see out there, John Chauvin?
Well, I think we do have a crisis with a kind of a long fuse. But let me say that there is a proposal out there. I think Paul knows it, the Peter Orszag proposal. These are the Brookings guys. Mm-hmm. I think that's the kind of proposal you have in mind of gradually raising the retirement age and gradually cutting benefits. But the steps are a little more than you suggest. I mean, they're introducing a new 3% value-added tax, 3% surtax for the high-income people. But anyway, let's go back to what you said about what happens when the trust funds run out, roughly, and you say 27%, maybe 30%, but roughly the revenues are about 30% short If at that time, and you can imagine politically this would be important, you said, well, we're not going to cut the current retirees, and we're not going to cut those over 55, but we're just going to cut the benefits for people under 55.
Okay, this is 2040 then you would have or to cut something. Right,
then you'd have to cut those benefits by more than two-thirds.
Yeah, but
there's only one-third of Social
Security. You can play those kinds of games. John, you know as well as I that you can play those kinds of games with anything. The same thing applies to private accounts. I mean, the reality on private accounts, we already know how this works from looking at the experience of other countries. Look at what's happening in Britain right now. They privatized their system pretty much along the lines that the Bush administration wants, saying, okay, now the whole problem is solved. And now they've just had a big report from the UK Pensions Commission saying, whoops, we're going to have a lot of poverty among old people. We need to throw a lot of additional government money at this problem.
But John Chauvin's already said he doesn't put much stock in the privatization as the answer here.
Actually, well, neither did the President's Commission, Paul. If you look at Proposal 2, the whole trick in terms of restoring solvency is changing the way it's indexed. It's not the individual accounts.
Yeah, but let's be clear. When we talk about changing the way it's indexed, what it means is, it means that the benefits that people actually receive might be similar in purchasing power to what people get now.
And let's get layman's terms. When you say index, it's how much it's going to grow each year and whether it's tied to wage growth or price inflation growth?
The way it works now is the amount you get is based on the wage you earned during your lifetime and is also adjusted for inflation. And what some of these proposals say is, well, we're going to stop raising the benefits based upon the wages that people have, and it's only going to be protected against inflation, which means that the benefits are going to steadily shrink as a relative to average income, because average wages are going up over time faster than prices. That's a plan to gradually make the system disappear.
Let's dwell on that for a minute. Is that a travesty or not? If we've got a problem, we've got some trillions to cover. Is that a reasonable way to fix it, or does that put American elders in poverty?
If you really wanted to just fix it, you'd want to make a little bit of a drop in those benefits. Mm-hmm. I mean, one way or another, there's something that's got to be closed. But this, if you look at what the White House is talking about here, they're talking about things that 40 or 50 years out will turn Social Security into a system that replaces very little of people's income when they retire. So it's really a way of basically abolishing the program gradually.
Do you see it that way, John Chauvin?
No, I think that's hyperbole. We all agree that if you index to prices, that the replacement rate or that Social Security benefits do not keep up with wages.
Right.
The only alternative that I know of is to raise the income of Social Security, raise taxes. I guess those who oppose the Bush plan should come up with an alternative plan. They should get behind the Diamond-Orszag plan or something similar, and then let's have a debate. But the idea that we shouldn't cut benefits and we shouldn't raise taxes, that doesn't work. That is the train wreck that everybody's trying to avoid.
It is one or the other, isn't it?
The truth is, look, this is a very remote crisis. It's a possible crisis, but if you look at the Social Security Trust Fund's estimates, they actually have three. When people talk about the thing getting exhausted in 2042, that's their middle estimate. The higher estimate, which is based upon growth rates that do not seem at all high, but are just the middle one is very conservative, have the system running with no changes at all, essentially indefinitely.
The point
is, I'm not saying we shouldn't do anything, but we have plenty of time to talk about this.
But everyone seems to agree, Paul Krug. But everyone seems to agree that the earlier it's addressed, by far the better.
No, really? I'm not part of everyone. I mean, I would agree that if it's addressed intelligently, better that it be done this decade rather than next decade. But if we're going to rush into it on the basis of a plan which, you know, I unfortunately didn't get to hear what John Chauvin said earlier, but, you know, I would, John, if you're willing to agree that private accounts have got very little to do with this.
Which he does.
Well, then,
just for solvency.
For solvency. Yeah.
I actually think private accounts are desirable, but
reform of the system until we have people in charge who aren't obsessed with converting it into a system of private accounts.
I want to get John Chauvin's response, but first, just one point, Paul Krugman. If this is a manufactured crisis, as you continue to describe it here, What do you think, let's cut to the chase, what do you think is the core motivation? Why manufacture a crisis around Social Security or lunge for a solution that's more radical or dislocating than necessary?
Well, Grover Norquist, the right-wing lobbyist, has said the problem is not that the program's in crisis, the problem is the lousy program. People on the right really dislike Social Security. They always have. And if you go, you know, the letters that the Heritage Foundation sends to its contributors to urging them to give more money say that never forget that our goal is to undo the legacy of the New Deal. So this is a program that they have always disliked because it is a, you know, in their point of view, a socialist program. It's certainly a mildly redistributionist program. It's government at work.
Okay.
And they're looking for a reason that people who actually like the program can buy into to demolish it.
So there's a charge. John Chauvin, if you will, let's build back up from there. First of all, do you see a fundamental philosophical fight going on here behind the numbers?
Well, maybe, but let's be clear. Paul argues that this is being pushed by people obsessed with individual accounts. The President's Commission is proposing very small individual accounts, as the introduction to this show mentioned.
$1,000.
The maximum contribution is $1,000. This is not proposing to go the route of Chile. The proposal, President's Commission proposal number two, which I think is the starting point, doesn't propose to eliminate redistribution. In fact, it proposes to increase the redistribution and make sure that everybody who works a full career ends up with 120% of the poverty level of income. It's increasing the benefits for the poor. And Paul says, well, this problem's a long time off, so let's wait. You know, I don't think he would say the same thing about global warming. That's a long way off, too. But we probably shouldn't wait. Now, maybe this administration's going to wait. Yeah. But on this long-term policy, they say it's better to act now than later. And I think they're absolutely right.
Let's just get cards on the table, then, to understand, John Chauvin, for you personally, are you committed to Social Security as we've known it, or do you think it's too redistributive, it's socialism, it should be pared back to something quite different?
No, the proposal that I wrote in The Real Deal, which you mentioned at the beginning of the show, very much was trying to strengthen and modernize Social Security and increase the redistribution. Ultimately, after a very long phase-in, the proposal in that book suggested that the basic Social Security benefits would be flat. They would be exactly the same for the janitor and Bill Gates, the same amount of money. So obviously more transfer from Bill Gates to the janitor than the current system. I think we want to have Social Security. I think there are good reasons for it. The main reason for it is that is a sort of paternalistic reason, namely that people do display myopia. They fail to save for their retirement. And as a society, we need to help them and sort of do what they would do if they had the correct foresight.
So we don't have millions of
the argument for Social Security still exists.
John Chauvin, Paul Krugman, please stand by. I want to welcome into our conversation from joining us from New Jersey tonight is William Dudley. He's chief U.S. economist at Goldman Sachs. Mr. Dudley, thanks for joining us.
Great to be here.
There has been a lot made of, however small it might begin, of this privatizing of some portion of Social Security. It seems clear that that's going to be the Christmas wrapping for whatever is offered here by the Bush administration as a way of getting higher returns. The president says, you know, these returns we get from Social Security are pathetic. You can do much better in the market. So let's get engaged with that. It's a major selling point. Is it a reasonable selling point, William Dudley, excuse me?
Well, the reason why the returns are higher is because you're taking more risk, so that there is no free lunch. If I invest in something that's going to generate a return over Treasury bonds, I have to be taking more risk. And I think that's really, you know, that needs to be made very clear. You know, one of the issues, I think, in terms of setting up these personal savings accounts is the fact that people are going to have a lot more volatility in terms of the Social Security benefit they get when they retire on.
Explain that.
Well, the projections that the actuaries make assume that these accounts are going to generate a 4.6% per year return.
After nice and steady over time.
After adjusting for inflation. Mm. That gives you the benefit calculation. But what they're not stressing is that there's a lot of dispersion around that central tendency forecast.
In other words, some years up and other years down.
Well, or it could be a long period of time when you got to real returns that were much lower than that. The benefit to individuals of these accounts only accrues to them to the extent that the return is above 2% a year real after adjusting for inflation.
Because that's about what Social Security is making now, you're saying?
Well, that's what the clawback, the way the proposal is set up, there's a clawback. Your Social Security benefits are reduced by 2% real a year based on the diversion of funds into your personal savings account. So you have to basically do better than that to actually get a bigger benefit.
And I don't want to miss that point. So it's not that you can go off celebrating with some kind of landfall returns. You're going to have your core benefits reduced by that amount as you hopefully get a higher return in the market.
Right. You're only going to do better to the extent that your return is above 2% real per year. The second issue that I think hasn't received enough attention is the year you retire really matters what the stock market is doing that year, because what's going to happen is you're going to take the account balance in these privatized accounts, and you're going to convert it into an inflation index annuity.
Mm-hmm.
The value of the benefit from that annuity is going to depend on what the stock market value was at that time.
So if it was the year 2000 or 2001, you might be a very different, sad person.
If you retired in 2000 versus you retired when the stock market was, say, 50% lower, and it did decline about 50% from peak to trough, it would be about a 15 to 20% lower benefit, not just for that year, but for every year until you died.
You're a Goldman Sachs guy. You're on the street. Are you saying then that privatizing is wrong or that it should be done differently?
I'm not saying it's wrong. I'm just saying that you have to understand what you're getting.
But, can I weigh in here a little bit more?
Paul Krugman, yes, please.
Yeah. There's another thing that is very important. As Bill is saying, the margins are fairly small. We're talking, you know, Social Security actuaries say 4.6% a year. I actually think that's high. We can go through that, but I think that's an unreasonably that's based upon history, which is probably not relevant. But then if you actually look at the experience of privatized systems in the rest of the world, they generate the fees that the investment companies charge.
Sure, the investment
to handle all
charges.
These small accounts. They're big. They're in Britain, which has a pretty well regulated system now after some bad experiences. The fees take 1.1 percentage points off the return. So that 4.6 that Bill Dudley's talking about becomes 3.5, I think realistically less than 3. And then you're taking on all this risk that Bill Dudley is pointing out, right?
Well,
deal that we're hearing about starts to disappear.
You don't see it there, William Dudley. I've just got you for another 20 seconds or so.
You could avoid those fees if you set up it in a low cost way like the thrift savings plans the federal government workers have. If you have a centralized authority that just invests in a limited number of index funds, you could probably hold the fees down very low.
But overall, you're saying be real. You could hit a high year or a low year on this, and it would affect you for the rest of your life. William Dudley, Chief Economist at Goldman Sachs, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Paul Krugman, John Chauvin, please stand by. We're going to take a short break here. We're talking about the White House push to overhaul Social Security and the great debate over how that should be done. Is the Bush administration being straightforward in its description of what we're looking at? Is anybody? And is Social Security in the repair shop here or in the chop shop? We're at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We are talking tonight about the White House push to overhaul Social Security. You can join the conversation. Something's got to be done, but what? And is this all economics? Is it all numbers? Or is there a fundamental philosophical issue here about our relationship to one another and to the aging? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We are delighted to be joined tonight from Palo Alto, California, by John Chauvin, professor of economics at Stanford University, co-author of The Real Deal, The History and Future of Social Security, and also by New York Times columnist and professor of economics at Princeton University, Paul Krugman. We've kept our callers waiting a long time. Let's bring them in. Jim's calling from Raleigh, North Carolina. Hi, Jim. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me on.
Sure.
I couldn't agree with Mr. Krugman more that this is a manufactured crisis. I think the real point of the Bush administration is to try to force savings onto Americans who have, from what I heard from your show a few days ago, a 0% savings rate.
Is that so bad? I mean, a little savings might help them and the country.
Well, yeah, I don't see it necessarily as a bad thing, but I think what the crisis, the looming crisis, is more of the market in dollars and our falling rates, and the fact that, you know, although the Japanese have constantly said that they won't, you know, divest in the dollar, I mean, they've been quietly selling a whole bunch of dollars and not investing as much in the last few months.
So look at the other fundamentals. Jim, let me ask you something. In your case, if it came to it, as Paul Chauvin lays it out, we've got to cut benefits or raise taxes to fix this situation. Which would you prefer?
Well, I certainly believe that a society that can't take care of their children and their elderly, you know, is a mean and nasty society that I probably wouldn't want to participate in.
Does that mean raise my taxes?
I think most people need to try to save towards their own retirement, but if in that case it doesn't happen, I think society needs to step up and pick up the balance. And I think a lot of little adjustments can be made. I mean, why should Bill Gates even be getting a Social Security check at this point? So I think if you can cut out a bunch of people who can afford their own retirement and redirect those funds to the ones who absolutely need it, I think, and by playing around with a few numbers like that, I think, you know, it could go towards a long way. I don't.
So go that way, Jim. We've got it. John Chauvin, let me put it to you on the, as you put it, you've got to cut benefits or raise taxes to fill this hole. If it was raising taxes instead, what would the impact of that be? Is it manageable, or would it croak the economy in your view?
I think it could be done without destroying the economy. Again, I think it would be better if we did it sooner rather than later. Let me just make a couple comments on things that have been discussed.
Yes, please.
These individual accounts, they are certainly risky. On the other hand, the proposal is that they be quite small in absolute terms and only a small portion of the Social Security benefit. The other thing to note is the traditional Social Security is not risk-free. We wouldn't be talking about cutting benefits or raising taxes or changing retirement ages or making them more taxable if they were risk-free. Traditional Social Security benefits are risky. As you mentioned early in the program,
they're risky in what sense? That we now don't have enough workers to cover the cost of them?
Sort of. The assumptions that are behind their design, the rate of mortality improvement, the rate of fertility, the rate of productivity growth, sometimes those things don't pan out.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned early in the program that young people don't have much faith in Social Security, so they obviously think it's a risky asset the way it's currently structured. So I think what we're doing is thinking about adding a risky element to an already risky program, except the kinds of risks are different. What the traditional program depends on these assumptions of mortality rates and productivity rates and fertility rates. The individual accounts depends on stock returns and bond returns.
Well, let me ask you on that front, if they're so small as you describe them, so marginal, then what's the point? And if they're going to stay small and marginal, then what's the point?
If they really were small and marginal in the minds of the Bush administration, they wouldn't be the centerpiece.
But they are small now at $1,000 a year. You'd agree, Paul, wouldn't you? That's small.
No, it's not for someone who's making $30,000 or $40,000 a year. Remember, the median family is in that range. So
for most
people, those are actually quite substantial sums. We're talking about diverting about, last I've heard, about 17% of the typical family's Social Security contributions into this private account.
But even then, it would be optional. You don't have to go into that account.
But they're also going to set it up so that there are very strong incentives. There are going to actually cut back on what you get if you don't join. So, no, I mean, this is – and it clearly, I mean, after the past 4 years, are you really prepared to say that you don't think that once you get one tax cut, it's not going to set the stage for another?
So you're saying $1,000 a year now and maybe half of it in 20 years or something?
I just think the aim is to establish the principle of the thing. Again, you know, I think John Sheldon and I would have a lot more common ground if I felt that we were dealing with an administration that was, in fact, being honest about what it was proposing, that was seriously thinking about the long-term trade-offs. Instead, we have a president who has repeatedly said, well, you know, you can get higher returns on a perfectly safe government bond than you get on your Social Security account, which is fundamentally misrepresenting the nature of the system. And we have a whole series of false representations about what the actual issues are, which gives me no trust at all in having these people do our reform.
John Chauvin, Paul Krugman's a big skeptic, and we know it. Are you skeptical, or are you buying the portrayal the Bush administration is giving at face value and saying, let's go?
Well, I'm less cynical about the administration. On the other hand, it's not I would not have designed it exactly the way they've done it. I do think that the Bush proposal, if it is the proposal 2 of the President's Commission, is better than doing nothing. So I don't think we should wait for till another administration comes along to do something. So I feel, and I actually think that the debate we should have as a country is, do we go along with the Bush administration and change the index and get rid of the benefit increases that are currently scheduled for people retiring in 20, 30, 40, and 50?
That would keep those people in the same relationship to the working community as retirees now.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Should we do that?
Mm-hmm.
Or should we raise taxes, raise the payroll tax? And I'd like to see the opponents of Bush come out with a proposal that works. By the way, there's one out there. Namely, I mentioned it already. Mm-hmm. Peter Diamond and Peter Orszag, the Brookings folks, have a proposal that should appeal to Paul Krugman and appeal to the Democrats. It's not a bad proposal. It's a good proposal. It's different than the president's. But I haven't heard any political person stick their neck out and say, that's what I'm for.
Paul Krugman, are the Democrats ducking here? Is it time for if the Democrats or Republicans who oppose this, is it time for them to say, okay, let's raise the withholding, let's raise taxes?
I think
people should say, look, I certainly am willing to contemplate some increase in taxes and also some, things like raising the retirement age, something that would look, I think actually the Diamond-Orszag proposal does more than is really necessary, to be honest. I think that the system is in better shape than they're being very conservative. They're giving too many hostages to the opponents.
I want to get some more callers in here, if you guys would let me. Scott's calling from Goldsboro, North Carolina. Hi, Scott. You're on the air.
Hi. I appreciate you taking my call. I want to make a couple quick points.
Yeah.
The first is that I think it's important to realize that we can't continue with the self-denial that something has to be done. And I think both sides agree that something needs to be done. There's two points I wanted to make. I think President Bush is trying to create an environment in which we're more self-reliant as a nation.
The ownership society.
Exactly. And I think by producing a program like Social Security that allows people to rely on others or that kind of gives them an excuse for not to pursue their own self-reliance or kind of productivity is a bad thing for a country. I think this is his direction to change to a society that kind of takes care of itself more.
Scott, let me just ask you on that front before your second point. It's not exactly a lavish retirement that Social Security provides for, and before it was there, you had elders in dire poverty. Are you afraid we may go back to that? I mean, is there some baseline commitment to elders that the country should have or not?
Well, I believe so. There's no doubt that a society has people of need. There's no doubt that just compassion in general is required to allow people to take care of other people, in a sense. But I think in general that we have gone to a society that should encourage people to take ownership of their own situation, their own retirement.
So if Bush is pulling back a bit, you're saying okay, and you had one more point there, Scott.
Yes, I also am discouraged or afraid of the foreign investment in our economy. And I believe, and I don't know if anybody's really touched on this point, but I believe this is an opportunity for us to take a little bit more ownership in our own economy to kind of balance the field of the Chinese investment.
So increase
investment.
American savings so we're not so dependent, but boy, we need it right now. Scott, thanks for your call. I want to get some more calls in here if we can. Joel is calling from Humboldt County, California. Hi, Joel. You're on the air.
Hi, how you doing?
Good, thanks. What's on your mind, Joel?
A lot. I don't want to get into etymology, but I think Mr. Chopin should look up the word cynical, and it doesn't apply to the gentleman from
Paul Krugman.
Mr. Krugman.
I don't know at this point. Paul Krugman's pretty skeptical, at the least. But what's your point on Social Security, Joel?
Yeah, skeptical. That's a totally different thing, but. The Bush administration is the cynical party in this deal.
Why?
I am a hardworking middle-aged guy who is currently unemployed, and I've had lots of economic problems.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, I'm currently interviewing for jobs that I will be very happy if I can get $24,000 a year. Social Security is a serious issue for me. It's not for Mr. Chopin. I don't think he's going to be...
Mr. Chopin. So you're saying you're looking forward to... You think you're going to need it when you get there, and you don't.
I think that it's, gosh, it's going to help.
So why not get some of that money into the stock market where you might get a better return, Joel?
Oh, that's great. In fact, I was thinking, why don't I put it on a football game?
That's in The Onion, by the way. The Onion has America's Finest News Source has their version of the Bush plan, which calls for people to bet the money on sports events.
Take it to Vegas. Joel, does it look just that risky to you, Joel, even just a fraction of your
Let's look at it this way. I may not have a choice if I've invested it in the stock market. I may be, I could have a dental problem. I literally.
Yep.
I could have a dental problem which forces me into, using Social Security. I could lose a job. And it'll depend on, stock market's down this year, Mr. Milky. Sorry about that.
Market's down. You're in trouble. You say make it secure because you may be counting on it, Joel. Thanks for your call. John Chauvin, there you hear a guy with no job at the moment, not anticipating a big income, and boy, he wants to be able to count on Social Security and not a diminished Social Security.
So I think he would not want to volunteer for these individual accounts. These are voluntary, as you pointed out.
But with incentives, as Paul said.
Well, I'm not sure what the incentives are. The cost is that you have to pay back the money you divert with a 2% over and above inflation interest rate.
Right.
I think it's basically a reasonably fair deal, but I can imagine some people would pass and other people would take it. And I guess that's the appeal of the voluntary plan. Myself, I actually don't necessarily support the voluntary feature in the sense that if Social Security is designed for people who lack foresight, the people who lack foresight are probably not going to volunteer for this plan. But I think the key is the president has chosen one of the two possible paths. He has cut back the promised benefits. There is another path, namely raise the payroll tax and perhaps adjust retirement ages. Paul Krugman has suggested that path. That's okay, too. What is not okay is doing nothing. And so I think that if the opponents of the Bush plan were more like Paul and said, okay, I think we could raise
we'll
the retirement
step up.
Age
mm-hmm.
a bit.
Mm-hmm.
I think we could change the indexing a little bit. I think we'd have a little bit of a tax increase. I think that would be perfectly fine.
Paul, last word to you. I hear you saying you don't trust doing this with Mr. Bush in the White House and Republicans in both houses of Congress. You want to wait for another president.
Unfortunately, that's true. I mean, it's at some point we've had 4 years of these people, and we've got some track record, and every financial promise they've made has turned out completely wrong. So you just don't trust this crew. Now, the thing I would say, yes, I think opponents have some obligation to come up with plans. Although I think they're also allowed, just as the privatization proponents are allowed to have their forecast about stock market returns, I think that opponents can say, look, I prefer this Congressional Budget Office projection, which is much more optimistic than the Social Security projection, in which case the adjustments are really small.
Well, you've both given us a lot of perspective on what is sure to be a big debate and conversation going forward in the coming months. We're very grateful to both of you. Paul Krugman, New York Times columnist, wonderful to have you tonight. Thank you so much for joining us. And John Chauvin, professor of economics and director of the Institute for Economic Policy Research at Stanford University, co-author of The Real Deal. Very grateful to have you. Thank you for joining us tonight.
Thank you.
Listeners, you can continue this conversation online at onpointradio.org. Click on forums. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.